I speak to you in the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sanctifier. Amen. Did you see that cartoon online recently showing two women at a clothesline, although men would have worked too? And one woman explains to the other that this new method of drying the laundry uses the latest technologies of solar and wind energy. Everything old becomes new again, right? If only we could convince our largely secular culture that church too is the latest and greatest app for how to maneuver through life's tricky channels and find our way to ultimate happiness and world peace, etc. I remember being taught that if one loves the tradition, as many of us here do, then we want it to remain relevant to the current issues in our times, relevant rather than an outdated relic. To that end, one theme in our readings today is about the relationship of church and culture. But first, we have the beloved and familiar gospel of Jesus the Good Shepherd. But, oh dear, perhaps that's irrelevant. Who even knows what a shepherd actually is anymore? I mean, we know the definition, but if I could have any show of hands of anyone who's been a shepherd, or who has a relative or friend who's been a shepherd? Ah, there are some. Very good. Me too. It probably doesn't show up on many resumes these days, but actually my father was a shepherd. By age 10, he was out tending sheep for food in his poor and mountainous region of Italy. By age 14, he'd moved up in the world and had become a grocer's helper. And the grocer's mother needed help too, getting him to sneak wine to her from the cellar. In repayment for this favor, she decided to teach him how to read since he'd never been to school. As a teenager, he may have preferred more food, but reading was bound to come in handy at some point. There are many stories about my father's youthful adventures, but getting back to our gospel of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, it's a lovely image, of course, fondly depicted in many stained glass windows and nursery paintings. Here we are, fuzzy little mixed up sheep, and Jesus calls us by name and holds us close to protect us and lead us home. Most of you know this image all too well, but it's a classic, of course. And a version of Jesus' wonderful last line in today's gospel is engraved over our front cathedral doors. I came that they may have abundant life. Our first reading from Acts also sounds fairly sweet on one level, how the early Christians all got along so well, sharing everything, spending time together with glad and generous hearts, working many signs and wonders. That middle bit, though, does sound quite socialist, to say the least, selling their possessions and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. Like a lot of good ideas, problems can arise if there are not some checks and balances. By chapter 5 in Acts, we have the story of Ananias and Sapphira. Do you know that story? Some do. If not, don't read it. It's really quite upsetting. So, not wanting to dwell too long there either, I turn to the epistle from 1 Peter, not usually a letter I'm crazy about with its admonitions for slaves to obey their masters and wives to obey their husbands. Mind you, the lectionary gurus were probably trying to soften things by having the reading start at verse 19. For it is a credit if, being aware of God, you endure pain while suffering unjustly. Sounds like a noble ideal, especially in an age of persecution. But here's the verse we did not hear that comes just before it. And I quote, "Slaves, accept the authority of your masters with all deference, not only those who are kind and gentle, but also those who are harsh. Oops, maybe I wasn't supposed to mention that. I mean, I get it, that they want us to maybe focus mostly on the last line of the reading, "For you were going astray like sheep, but now you have returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls." Such a nice bookend for our gospel. But meanwhile, why does this letter have these nasty bits endorsing slavery and patriarchy, often called the household codes? Digging deeper into various commentaries to try and answer that question, I came across this fascinating idea by Miroslav Volf called soft difference. Volf reflects on the relation between church and culture in 1 Peter and explains that these endorsements of the accepted practices or status quo of the times, like slavery and patriarchy, were part of a strategy of fitting into cultural norms so that these upstart new Christians would be taken seriously. When in Rome, do as the Romans do, right? Plus, I believe it's incumbent upon us, presumably more enlightened 21st century people, to allow for the context in which these scriptures were written. Context, context, context. Always so important when we're reading the Bible. We need to consider the cultural values of that time and place before passing judgment on any ideas that may seem harsh to us. It's like the biblical saying of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Sounds harsh until you learn that before that rule, if a peasant knocked out the tooth of a noble, then he'd likely be executed for it. Eye for an eye was a great step towards equality, given the context of the times. In the same way, Peter's letter does its best to offer soft differences with the culture of its times, rather than harsh differences. Or as they said in the 60s, you gotta talk to people where they're at. I was raised Catholic and was a bit annoyed that when we school children were lined up for Friday confessions, the nuns would bobby pin tissues to the heads of the girls with no hats on, since that was against the rules. Who made up such a dumb rule? St. Paul did when he said that women must have their heads covered in church. But guess what? In that time and culture, yes, in that context, only loose women or ladies of the night went around with uncovered loose hair. So, while I appreciate our message from Peter about accepting the reality that unjust suffering comes to Jesus' disciples at times, and don't we know it, and that the Good Shepherd takes care of us in such situations, there's also something else to learn here about how we can relate to our culture and times with soft differences rather than harsh ones. Yes, we Christians do follow a different path, but we can look for common ground between us and our secular culture or with people of other faiths. Chances are that, like the two women at the clothesline, the common ground is already ancient and deeply human. But let's play along and bring it forward as the latest and the greatest. A website called Progressive Christianity suggested that today could also be celebrated as Pluralism Sunday. Perhaps based on Jesus' reference a few verses later to his other sheep that do not belong to this fold. So for our reflection this week, we can also consider the importance of appreciating the diversity in God's creation. A creator who made over 22,000 species of moss alone can hardly be expected to stay put inside just one religion or culture. May we rejoice this week in the abundant life Jesus promises as we consider the richness of creation and of God's presence, often found in surprising places and ways throughout our world, if we can but leave soft and porous the apparent borders between us and others. Amen.